You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Welcome in, everyone. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. It is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. So the 24-hour is going to apply for us.
What do you mean?
It's our first time on this week, but ultimately...
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
We're not going to deep dive the Bills' loss to Baltimore. It happened. They were blown out. It was kind of over at halftime. They gave a little bit of fight in the beginning of the third quarter, but they needed to be perfect to do so.
It was a weird feeling because that hasn't happened in so long.
It's been a while.
I was sitting there and I was so mad.
In terms of the regular season.
Oh, right. But I'm so mad. This doesn't feel right. I don't like this. Because usually when they're losing, it's okay, it's fine. They'll come back or they'll at least make an effort, And not that they didn't make an effort, but it'll be close,
right?
In the end,
right?
I turned the game off with 7 minutes to go. I don't think I've done that since.
Yeah, it was
the Colts game when Jonathan Taylor was scored 5 touchdowns.
It was not close. It is what it is. It did happen. I think the Ravens, just real quick thoughts on it. I think the Ravens were the perfect team to match up to Buffalo with the weakness in the middle of the defense. I don't want to say dependency. That's a bad way to put it. But their ability to run the ball is maybe second to none in the NFL.
Yeah, if one of Terrell Bernard or Matt Milano is there.
I think it's a completely different game. It's maybe a different. I don't know.
I think they
don't mean that much in terms of point spreads. They just don't.
No, I know, but
I think
I'm
it was
not
a
saying
bad matchup. And
I'm not
you
saying
came
point
in,
spread.
No,
I'm just saying in terms of shutting down Derrick Henry.
Yeah,
or at
I don't
least,
think you do.
At least minimizing him.
I still don't think you do. The 87-yard run maybe doesn't happen, but it's like a 45-yard run. I think realistically the Bills went in there with a bad game plan that got right away.
I mean, Joe Brady even said that yesterday.
Yeah.
He said, I hate saying it, but it was a bad game plan.
Yeah. And ultimately, you got. But to be fair, blowouts do happen in the NFL. For the Bills, though, in the regular season at least, they just haven't happened really ever. They've been a very good team at keeping it close and pulling out a lot more wins than losses. But it is what it is. They are still 3-1. And to be fair, you look around the rest of the NFL, and I was saying this before the game even started on Twitter, where it just is I don't really fear anybody in the AFC. Everyone kind of looks the same. And I don't mean the same of like they're all playing the same kind of style. I mean everyone has very clear weaknesses that teams can exploit if they're talented enough, if they've got the quarterback to do so, what have you. The Chiefs. Who are they going to throw the ball to? Xavier Worthy and Travis
Mahomes
Kelce
is going to throw it 100 feet in the air, run down the field and catch
it. And just going to hope and pray. Baltimore, as in control of that game as they were, if that trick play doesn't happen, there's a very real chance the Bills go right down the field, score, it's 21-17, and they're sitting there going, oh my God, the second half thing is real.
Yeah.
Because they're people, no matter what teams say, they read headlines, they listen to sports radio, sports TV, what have you. They would have heard from probably multiple people of this team gives up way too many leads in the second half and ultimately costs them. And it would have already happened with the Bills and Ravens before the last time the game was in Baltimore. The game was 20-3 at one point. The only difference there was the Bills were able to score at halftime or right before halftime to make it 20-10, and actually then kind of press their weight down on them and sort of push forward. They ultimately were not able to do that on Sunday. But coming out of the second half, if it's all of a sudden 21-17, it is a different game. You saw up to that point, though, the Bills needed to be perfect early on in the third, and they were not able to, obviously with the trick play, the turnover, what have you. But again, if they score there, the Ravens have their own issue. Houston, the Bills' opponent this week, have they looked good once? The Colts look like a disaster. They were right to the wire with Houston.
I don't know.
Minnesota killed. I mean, killed them.
Yeah, the Minnesota game was bad. But I wouldn't say
that was never a contest.
I mean, Houston, I think, has just. I think it's all there. They just haven't found the right formula yet. Kind of like what the Bills.
I don't know if it is all there.
You think? You don't
I
think
don't
so?
Think it is at all. Their offensive line is dreadful.
Right. Yeah, but in terms of talent, in terms of CJ Stroud and offensive weapons, they definitely have that. But, if the offensive line's bad, then there's no hope. I mean, you can't
And they don't have the run game that's all going to lead the Bills having Von Miller on the field for nine plays.
Right.
They don't have that kind of run game. Kind of jarring that Von
Miller only played nine snaps. I didn't really like that. But I also look at the Ravens game, and the one thing you also saw coming out of the second half was that the Bills showed once again that they are one of the best teams, if not the best team, at adjusting coming out of the locker room. I mean, they came out of that locker room, shut the Ravens down twice. And if it wasn't for the trick play, I think, like you said, it would have been, what, 21-17?
Yep.
It would have been a lot closer of a game very early on in that second half because of their adjustments.
I don't know if the Bills can win that game, but...
No, but it's a lot closer, and it's a lot different of a conversation. But I think it can all come down to that trick play, at least for the second half. For the first half, you just looked unprepared.
Yeah.
And whether that be, you know, it wasn't a short week by any means, but at the same time, you did play on Monday night, so technically it's a short week.
Yeah.
There is that, but it's not like, you know, you played on Thursday night.
Yeah, it wasn't anything crazy like that.
Right.
I will say, it's just, again, kind of our last few thoughts on here. If you want to jump in, 803-0550 is the number to call. I'm not nearly as much of like in a panic as I kind of was as it was happening. Like, I always enjoy that, where like in the moment I'm, you know, I'm still a young fan that freaks out. I mean, I don't watch Texas games with people for a very specific reason, but like after you sit on it, you sleep on it, what have you, I'm like, okay, yeah, maybe the backups playing out of their mind was maybe exactly that. They were playing out of their mind. They were not necessarily showing that they're all starter qualities on like every other football team.
Right.
You know, eventually, yeah, not having Terrell Bernard, Matt Milano, Taron Johnson in your defense probably will cause some issues. And along with that, and this is maybe one that pains me, maybe not having any sort of downfield passing game and always having to go to bubble screens probably isn't the best idea. You probably do need to develop something that is going down the field. That really is maybe my one worry post, the first month of the season, right? Because is today October 1st? We're in Halloween season now. We're in fall.
We are.
Cool. So, on that. So the first month of the season is done and over with.
Wow.
I think my biggest worry about the Bills going forward is not the health of the defense. They clearly are getting healthier. Bernard likely is going to practice at some point this week. We'll see about Taron Johnson, but neither have been put on IR, so you feel pretty good on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll see about Taylor Rapp. Although, you know, you have the depth with Mike Edwards, I'd like to see him. I'd also like to see Cole Bishop play a little bit more. So, there, you know, there's not necessarily issues there. You've been healthy on the offensive line, even with McGovern and everything that went on there. He ultimately was cleared to come back.
That was really weird and annoying.
My thing, though, has been, and I heard Jeremy and Joe talking about it, the usage of Dalton Kincaid.
Yeah.
And really, for me at least, and I think Joe was the one that said this, that like he's regressing in terms of his yards per game. He was in like the 40s last year. He's at like 33 this year. For me, and I said this a lot in the offseason, or me and you did, while I was very confident in Khalil Shakir, I was confident in both Shakir and Kincaid. And I thought they would make up for not really having a number one receiver, quote unquote. Now, I will also say, I was somebody that was kind of upset that they only drafted one receiver. I wanted the Bills to add two. I think they do need to get younger and just overall more athletic at that position and stop going, for lack of a better term, discount shopping for wide receivers. We're kind of seeing that now again with the usage of Curtis Samuel. Samuel's essentially a non-factor, and he's the only free agent wide receiver you brought in this offseason that has more than a one-year deal. That's slightly concerning, that he has really no role other than he's kind of the gadget trick play guy. I don't know if that's due to the turf toe. I don't. But up to this point, he's sort of like Isaiah McKenzie at this point, which is not great. So it kind of comes down to Kincaid, and up to this point, he really hasn't done anything at all, Josh. I mean, he has the 31-yard catch up the middle of the field, and he has the really nice touchdown that was sort of a broken play, extend the play, and throw it. There really are not dialing up many plays for him. We talked about it that first week, that ultimately it was kind of laughable because Arizona was like triple, at times quadruple covering him, led to two targets, one catch for 11 yards. Next week against Miami, I think it could be fair to say you played about a half because you know, James Cook kind of ended the game, and as did your defense. But even there, four targets, four catches, 33 yards. Again, not really pushing the ball down the field, though, there, by any stretch of the imagination. And then the last 2 weeks, he's over 40 yards. Against Jacksonville, again, about a half, really. Five targets, three catches, 41 yards and a touchdown. And then last week, seven targets, five catches, 47 yards. A bad, though, third down drop, I would say.
You want to know how it compares to 4 weeks last season?
Yeah.
Last season, through four games, Dalton Kincaid had 17 targets, 15 receptions, 99 yards, and no touchdowns. This year, through four games, he has 18 targets, 13 receptions, 132 yards, and one touchdown.
Yeah, that's not good.
No, it's not any different than last year. It's one more target.
And last year, you could
two
argue.
Two less receptions.
Yeah, and last
sure,
year.
Sure, there's more yards and a touchdown, but like, I just don't see. Like, we talked about this last year. Oh, he's in his rookie year. He's fine. Mm-hmm. Everything's going to be fine. He's going to ramp it up. And he did at the end of the season, but now this early on this year, he hasn't been used as like their target. It mm-hmm. felt like all offseason he was going to be the guy in terms of passing. And now, looking at these numbers, yes, I understand they're spreading the ball around, but one person is going to emerge. And so far, it's been Khalil Shakir.
Mm-hmm.
One person is going to emerge as the number one, and it just kind of feels like, well, yes, I'm happy with what Shakir is doing. I don't mind that he's the number one.
No, I'm happy with that. Yeah, good.
But I feel like Kincaid should be number two. He probably is with those numbers somehow, but he should be number two right behind Shakir.
Especially because of how the Bills talked about him when they drafted him.
Right.
Which is, he's a weapon. Mm-hmm. You know, think of him as a receiver, what have you. Which, like, if he's being thought of as a receiver, those numbers are also bad. If not more so.
Yeah.
Like, as a tight end, I can argue, yeah, like, oh, well, okay, you know, limited route tree, what have you. He's got a block two, all this stuff. If we're thinking of it as a receiver, which the Bills have wanted you to do so,
yeah,
those are not good numbers. Along with that, he was a first-round pick. You need to get more out of your first-round picks. When you did that, by year two or three, he needs to be argued as a top-five tight end. Namely, not just because, you know, of the position you took him in, but also because of who your quarterback was. And then when you got rid of Diggs and didn't pay Davis and really kind of cleared the cupboard of, you know, the wide receiver, you know, overall weapon talent that you had, that to me is maybe the most concerning thing I've seen so far this year. Even though the offense up until Sunday has been very good, that is a worry. That mm-hmm. ultimately up to this point, we have not really seen Kincaid take over a game, very clearly become the number one target for
Allen. Have a Travis Kelce
Allen.
Game.
Not even just Travis Kelce game, an Isaiah Likely game.
Yeah.
That when Kansas City was like, Mark Andrews won't touch the ball. They're like, okay, cool, Isaiah Likely. You know, on Sunday, the offensive line was its own thing, don't get me wrong. But Shakir goes down with an ankle injury. We don't even know if he'll play this weekend. Because they're going to take it day by day. We'll see. He was genuinely different after that ankle injury. He was obviously not the same player. And you got really nothing out of Kincaid. And that is a worry. He also already came in as a bit of an older player. He came in a little bit more seasoned through his years in college. I think he went the JUCO route then to Utah. It's just, this is sort of the same problem, though, honestly, that Kansas City has had, which is they're like one injury away from looking at their wide receiver room going, yeah, I don't know what we got.
Well, they're there
that's
now.
That's where they're at. I mean, they signed Hollywood Brown partially because all they had last year was Rashi Rice
mm-hmm.
and Travis Kelce by the time the playoffs got in. But that was about it. Hollywood Brown goes down basically right away. And now you're seeing Rashi Rice go down. And up until this past Sunday, Xavier Worthy has a really good week one in which I think we can all kind of argue now at this point were broken plays. He still needed to produce, don't get me wrong, but they were broken plays because then the next 2 weeks he went back-to-back, two receptions, 17 yards. That was it. It was four targets, two catches, 17 yards. And then last week, outside of the one big play, which was an amazing throw and a great play by them, I do not want to take anything away from that, he didn't do much. Their offense still looks bad. The Bills sort of feel like they're alarmingly close to that same position of, if Shakir's not getting open, what's happening? And that was the thing that we were talking a lot about in the offseason, Josh, which was they maybe don't have the one, like Diggs was the last few years, but they have a lot of twos and threes, solid guys.
Right, but so far those twos and threes are looking like threes and fours.
Yeah,
and that's
Curtis
the
Samuel,
problem.
You're not getting anything out of. Mac Hollins.
Okay,
is concerning.
With Curtis Samuel, I don't think you're not getting anything out of him. I think they're using him wrong. I don't think they're, like, yes, obviously in Carolina, mm-hmm. he was the gadget guy. He worked like that. But as Jeremy and Joe mentioned earlier, he was behind DJ Moore and
yeah.
somebody else that was there.
Robbie Anderson,
yeah. But I mean, I feel like at the time, maybe those two were a little interchangeable, but he was still behind DJ Moore.
Mm-hmm.
He had someone ahead of him. Whereas he comes in here and there's not that number one guy ahead of him that will be the main focus. And I think that they just need to find a new way to use Samuel. I think he can be used as a regular receiver rather than just this gadget guy. Sure, you can have him be your gadget guy so long as you never do that trick play again, because if you ever do that trick play again, I might rip my hair out. I walked into the room and I saw, oh, Curtis Samuel is under center, and then the ball was snapped and everything happened.
The all,
it was like,
the all
wow,
22
okay.
footage of that play is alarming. I am glad, though, that Joe Brady didn't try to defend it or didn't.
He owned up to it.
He also didn't take a Doug Peterson route, which is the players did not perform, which was wild over the weekend. But but ultimately, the target of that play was Mac Hollins.
He was triple covered.
Yeah. Like, the Ravens never once bought in. Because as you put it, why is Curtis Samuel under center? Why is Josh Allen as a wide receiver?
And if you want to, okay, I'm all for trick plays, right? Like, I used to love the Brian Daboll fake punts. I mean, those were great. And even when they tried the fake punt in Kansas City, I know it went horribly wrong, but it was still like, okay, you know what? You're being creative and you're being aggressive. I like it. But you got to do something where Allen isn't looking like a wide receiver.
Well, and I mean, that's the thing, too. Look at last night, Detroit and Seattle.
Yeah. Oh, right, yeah.
Trick plays work when no one really suspects anything at the line of scrimmage.
Mm-hmm.
It was why a big thing last year, the fake punt with DeMar Hamlin. Everyone saw Hamlin kind of like get excited and start moving around. It was like, what's he doing over there?
Yeah, what's he
doing over there?
Why is he
It's
antsy?
The same with Allen. Why are you setting up as a wide receiver? You look at him and go, all right, well, they're going to do something with him.
Right. And
I think target him.
I think, to be fair, too, like when you look at how the play breaks down, there was a chance that it could have developed into something at least more than what it was, not in terms of a throw.
Better block from Deion.
Right, a better block from Deion mm-hmm. and a better block from Curtis Samuel, too. But to be fair, Curtis Samuel's going up against Kyle Van Noy.
Yeah.
Or something along those. He's going up against a lineman, and he's Curtis Samuel. So, like, you got to cut him a little slack. But again, it's I wonder if they're ever going to try a play like something to that effect again this season, just because of how badly that went.
And I hope not. I hope not.
It depends on how what it is. It depends on how they do it. But I just I look at what happened in that game, and it's one of those games where it's like, you know what? You just gotta move on from that because you weren't prepared, and you just need to learn from the fact that you weren't prepared. There's nothing from the game that you can take away other than the fact of you need to be ready next time.
Yeah,
because you're going to see Baltimore in the playoffs if you make it there. If they make it there.
Well, I mean, you may. There's a good chance.
I think you will.
Baltimore has righted the ship. They went from a team that were kind of worried about too. No, they're fine. They're fine.
I mean, but I have a really good feeling that if you get there, you'll see them in either the AFC Championship game or the game before that.
Does always feel, I mean, yeah, they're always seeing Kansas City, so it is one of those things.
And to be fair, too, while we were just talking about Kansas City, unless they do something right now, are they a little bit of a paper tiger?
No, they totally are. I want to jump into that. We'll maybe do it next segment.
I constantly
have to, like, back away and go, well, no, they've won two straight Super Bowls. Like, I can't criticize them.
And they have Patrick Mahomes.
They look horrendous.
Yeah.
Mahomes isn't himself playing well. He hurts Rashee Rice. It's a fluke play. I don't want to put it like that.
Yeah. That hurts him, such bad luck.
Off a terrible interception.
Mm-hmm.
They look awful. They're 4-0, and it's every team you watch just, like, clearly just bungling it away. But that's all it is.
If the Bills
The Chargers didn't have their two starting tackles and still had that game close, and then still also botched it themselves.
If the Bills beat the Ravens, would they be the best 4-0 team?
No, Minnesota.
You think Minnesota?
I think
Minnesota's
I think Minnesota's
good?
The only elite team in football right now. It's October 1st. I say that with a grain of salt.
Sam Darnold still can Sam Darnold himself.
Sam Darnold's awesome, though.
Yeah. I'm really glad I started playing him fantasy.
Yeah,
I've had him on my bench for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And I made the right decision.
Time now to get connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Taking your thoughts on the Bills 3-1 start. We're through the first month of the season. What have been your biggest takeaways? Let's go to Rick here on the line. Rick, how are we doing today?
Good, guys. How are you doing today?
Doing very well.
Doing good.
I couldn't agree more on the tight end part. Like, and I don't follow college football, but all I remember is when we got this Kincaid kid, it was like he dropped two balls in all of college. We were watching Knox drop 50% of the balls thrown to him. Like, I looked at this kid and said, yeah, here we go, man. Here's the next Kelsey. Here's the next the guy from the 49ers.
Kittle.
Mm-hmm. And, like, why are we not getting this guy the ball? It's just mind-blowing to me. I just can't figure it out. He's a stud.
I think it's the thing too. Yeah, and Rick, thanks for the call.
See what your thoughts were?
Yeah, thanks for the call, man. That's the thing too. Is like, you bring up college. Go back to his game against USC, his senior year. It's one of the best performances you'll see from a skill position player in the sport. And yeah, like I guess it's my thing too, is they're not ever getting him the ball. Like it doesn't really ever feel like Kincaid is the main factor of a play. He's the main character of the play. By the way, that USC game, he caught 16 passes for 234 yards and a touchdown.
Where's that?
I'm not asking for necessarily that. Like against
Why not?
That was against a bad USC defense. Like it. But that was sort of the culmination of like, yeah, Kincaid's an awesome tight end. He's an awesome receiving tight end.
Mm-hmm.
We have yet to really be able to even see that up to this point. I think, what did Joe say? His highest target totals in his career has been 11, and it was against the Bengals.
Yes.
In
week 9 of last year, yep. It was 11 targets, 10 receptions, 81 yards, no touchdowns.
They didn't even push the ball down the field.
Right.
That's
8 yards, 8.1 yards per reception.
That's a big fear for me too, is the lack of efficiency they're getting out of basically everyone but Shakir.
Well, and I've gone back and forth.
I don't want to. Shakir's the big positive I'm taking from the passing game. He has been wonderful.
Right. Oh, I mean, he set the NFL record now with consecutive catches.
Is it still just 20? No, he caught a few passes after the 28, right?
Well, right, yes. But I the Bills tweeted it out in the game.
They were live tweeting going, new record.
His first catch was breaking the record, I think.
Yeah.
But regardless, I've gone back and forth on the whole dink and dunk idea of just move the ball down the field like really slowly and just get there and get there and get there. But it's worked the first 3 weeks. And yeah, sure, there was a few big plays mixed in there, obviously. Mm-hmm. Like the Coleman's first catch down the sideline against Arizona and other things mixed in there here mm-hmm. and there. But if that's what they want to do, they got to stick to it. But at the same time, you have to know your opponent. The Ravens were not the opponent to do that against. The Ravens' defensive line tore your offensive line to shreds.
Yeah, it was rough.
And it was because you ran so many different screen plays and options like that. You got rid of all of the pre-snap motion. Where did all of that go? That was the part that confused me the most, was why not continue that? Why not keep that going? Because it was clearly working. I don't understand why it was working, personally, because I'm not an offensive coordinator. I'm not going to sit here and try to say that I know what I'm doing.
And to be fair, for years, the Bills also had no idea what a screen game was.
Well, exactly.
So
and I'm glad that they're trying to develop that, but it shouldn't be every single play, especially against the Ravens, because Kyle Hamilton was eating that alive as a safety.
He's good, though, man.
He's so good. But every single time you had something going, potentially,
the Ravens
there
always
he is.
Have a great defensive player.
Right.
That just scares the hell out of me. And Kyle Hamilton is just like the newest version, which I think
it was Roquan Smith, and now it's Kyle Hamilton. Well, it's both still, but now it's Kyle Hamilton.
I can't, man. I feel like his rookie year wasn't that great, and then he just exploded last year.
He got kind of torched in his rookie year a few times.
Yeah, and then 2023, he's a first-team All-Pro. I mean, he is really good. But for me, it's just the screen game. I think there was a little bit of panic in the coaching staff after the 87-yard touchdown run on the first play from scrimmage for Baltimore.
Yeah.
I think that was a bit of a, oh, hell, what's going on? What do we do?
What just happened?
But for me, though, it is still the overarching problems have been outside of Shakir, you're really not getting a ton. Coleman, though, there's moments.
And those down-the-sideline catches.
There's a tough drop. It's really tough drop.
But he makes up with two other ones.
Sure.
Two catches.
I mean, eerily reminiscent of Diggs against Kansas City. It's fine. It's cool.
But hey, listen, I'm not trying to be cliche, but like Allen said in the post game, it's good to have this happen early.
I don't disagree.
Right?
You don't want to be the hottest team in football in September.
Exactly. You don't win anything in September.
Yep.
You win stuff in February. That's where you go.
Yeah.
That's the important part.
Which is why, Minnesota right now is the hottest team in football. I think it's inarguable they look the best. It is still September. And I think you even brought it up, Sam Darnold could still become the Sam Darnold we've all known for years.
But this is a new Sam Darnold that never had Justin Jefferson.
If he doesn't, though, man, San Francisco, you had him. He was there.
You did.
You run a similar system.
Right. New York, you had him.
No, you didn't. You ruined him. Everyone else has been salvaging him. monsters.
The Panthers salvage him? No, they didn't. Oh, the Panthers saw him and said, "We'll fix you," and then made him worse.
The Panthers are just the first team to discover what will eventually be a good quarterback.
Yeah,
they just have to go through like the worst periods. They had and then the new team will get them, and it's
better.
They were
polishing a diamond with a little like hand sander, and then you get to the 49ers, and then they have like a more like industrial type, and now you're in Minnesota where it's a diamond making factory.
Yeah, I was gonna say the same thing. Kevin O'Connell's he's got to be favorite for coach of the year, right? I mean, just
for
like
now,
run away.
Yeah, I feel like
runaway.
Yeah,
right now, man, he's gonna have JJ McCarthy next year because I mean they're losing Darnold. The Giants will pay the GDP of a small European country to get him. That is over. I already see him as the other New York quarterback. Let's go back to the phones. Before our first time out, we've got Jerry on the line. Jerry, welcome to the show, my friend.
Good morning. I don't think they pivoted well at the wide receiver position. I think they had a plan 2 years ago. Then there was the run of the four receivers in the draft, and then we ended up taking Kincaid. Last year, he was expecting to have that third-round collateral from Tremaine Edmonds to move up in the first round. He didn't get it, so he couldn't get to where he needed to do. So he tried to get more collateral and move back and got Coleman, kind of a project. This year, I think we're counting on Minnesota to be horrible so we can move up in next year's draft. And guess what Minnesota's not doing for us?
It's still not working.
They're not being horrible. I'll tell you one thing I'd like to see them do differently. On Sunday, our first series, I want the first play of the game. I want Mac Hollins or Samuel to limp off the field with a fake injury. And I want to put Scantling out there and overthrow him by 10 yards so that the defense thinks, oh, my God, they will try and do this. Because we don't try and do this.
The mind games.
It's fair, though. Jerry, I think you bring up really good points there, too, on the terrible luck. That is funny, though. I would laugh really hard if that is exactly what they did, which is we're just going to chuck it deep, knowing full well it won't work, just to scare the hell out of Houston.
Watch. You know what would be even funnier? Another step
which,
to that?
They do it.
They do it trying to just kind of play like just like a false hand, and then all of a sudden MVS catches it for like a 90-yard touchdown.
That's what I'm saying is Houston's secondary might also be bad. Like
right,
Trevor Lawrence missed Kirk by like quite a bit, and he was wide open.
Yeah.
That should have been like a 70-yard touchdown.
I do feel like Kirk maybe could have made an extra effort there.
That was bad throw. He's wide open. You got to hit that.
Yeah.
On the luck point, all right, we got to take our first time out, but I want to dive into that because I think that is right. You do look back at the Kincaid draft and you do see just all of a sudden, oh no, they can't get anybody. Like everyone is gone. And that wasn't even a particularly, at the time, thought of very good draft class for the wide receiver position. It starts with Jaxon Smith-Njigba. He goes, though, at 20. That's the first wide receiver taken. Look back to like the last few years. You're getting a guy going in the top five, likely two in the top 10. And then it's, you know, Miami's forfeited pick. Haha. Quentin Johnston, who has kind of become okay, which way to turn it around, young man. Zay Flowers, pretty darn good. And Jordan Addison, pretty darn good. You do wonder, though, if one of those teams doesn't take Zay Flowers or Jordan Addison, mm-hmm. I would agree. I think the Bills do absolutely do that. And then the Tremaine Edmonds point, I forgot about that, but that was a heated point for being in the front office. So if they really thought they were getting a third round pick and didn't, and it probably did botch it, and then they did move back. Now I think they've got 9 picks and they're gonna have more cap space next year. That's why I've kind of been on the train. I still think they're going to end up drafting another wide receiver. They've got too many guys on 1 year deals, or like Curtis Samuel, not necessarily doing a ton on a 3 year deal. You just kind of needed that guy there.
I think the whole Samuel thing is just you're not using them correctly right now. They're still trying to figure that out. I mean, remember how a lot of people were talking about this offense in the beginning of the season of once you get to week 7 or 8, you're finally going to see this humming along as it should be.
Yeah, maybe that was true.
I mean, the first 3 weeks were fantastic, but it's not gonna, like I said, it's not going to work for every team. The Ravens were not the team to run those types of schemes against. It works for the Cardinals. It works for the Dolphins and it works for the Jaguars because of how they play defense. But yeah. The Ravens are a completely different animal. Now, obviously, every team is, but I think this is also just a learning moment for Joe Brady, as this is his first full year as Bills offensive coordinator.
Yep. 803-0550, the number to call. What have been your takeaways through the first month of the NFL season? Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here until 12 o'clock. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
You defense did a good job getting us the ball back and getting it to a potential two-score game, and us to go down and try to get points. And so those are the situations that it's not that I just want it back, but I just got to be better in those situations. And there's no one to blame but myself. Like, and not just because of the results of the play, like go to the Jacksonville game. There's times where there was a touchdown that I didn't like the play call. And so I got to continue to improve and get better.
Bills offensive coordinator Joe Brady there. I really like that point, Josh, right at the end where he's like, yeah, there's touchdown plays against Jacksonville. I didn't really like the play call. And it's like, I don't know, man. Like, I feel like it worked then. You're fine. Like, you can kind of not like it, but be like, well, that worked. All right, we're going to put that in the Rolodex now. That works. Right,
yeah, it's like when you're playing Madden or College Football 25 and you're like, oh, that play worked. Go back to recent plays and you
right,
star it.
Right, star it. Yeah. Getting ready for the Houston Texans on the road Sunday. Miraculously still a 1 p.m. game, which I've known for months that it's a 1 p.m. game. But then it leads me to go like, Jacksonville was a primetime game.
Have they
really
ever flexed a week 5 game to primetime?
Feels like they should.
They probably should.
I mean, you know, both these teams are 3-1. And I felt this way even going into Sunday night. Again, like, I don't think Sunday night has really actively changed like how I think of the Bills. I think they're still a very good team. I think obviously they can still win in a year in quote-unquote transition. I've said that for a while. But man, I look at the Houston Texans. This would be a game, I think, if the Bills do lose, I will start to like really look at like the early part of the season and go, oh, man, all right, so is it really just because these weren't very good teams? I think they should be Houston, even on the road. I don't think that crowd has necessarily been vaunted as like, oh, it's a rough place to play. Like Baltimore, yeah. Baltimore is known, especially at night in primetime games.
They're 20-3, the 21-3 for a reason.
It's a hell of a place to play. It is.
Yeah.
But Houston up to this point, man, honestly, Indianapolis, who Anthony Richardson, I think up to this point, early in year two, not good.
Is he made of glass?
That's concerning, right? Like
he can't stay healthy,
and he seeks out contact like no other quarterback I've ever seen.
Right. They ran him after he injures his hip,
the next play,
and then he dives into the tackle. He doesn't slide.
You're sitting there going, "What is happening here?" So you barely win that game, 22-27. It's in Indianapolis,
29-27.
Indianapolis. So I get it. Week one on the road, sure. The Bears, week two, 19-13 win.
Yeah.
The Bears up to this point, I mean, it's made a lot of us look kind of like idiots when we're like, oh, man, Bears might be the best, like, you know, scenario for a number one quarterback to go into ever. And they've looked dreadful.
Yeah.
Washington with Jaden Daniels. They don't punt. Josh, they don't punt. They may not have a punter
good
on the roster.
Good. Get rid of punters.
But
hear me out.
You know, but they barely win that game. And Caleb Williams himself did not play particularly well. Two picks, you know, 174 yards through the air, which was much better than week one because he had under 100. But you know, then you look at Stroud, not above 65 completion percentage, one touchdown.
I think the one thing that's constant with Stroud through 4 weeks so far, though, is he's gotten over 200 passing yards every single game, even in the blowout loss to Minnesota. I look at him as a player in this offense, and I'm still nervous about that. But other than that, I'm not super nervous. I mean, yes, if he can connect with Nico Collins, Stephon Diggs, and if Tank Dell is playing Tank Dell, then that's an issue. But other than that, the running back room doesn't really make me nervous. I mean, Joe Mixon's questionable. Damian Pierce is questionable. So you're down to Cam Akers. Potentially.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, it's very early in the week. You don't know any of these guys' injury statuses. But, like, my point there is, looking back to when Joe Mixon was on the Bengals, right? It was never the focal point. He was never really that big of an issue. And even when he was playing and he was getting the ball, he never really gave the Bills that many problems.
Yeah.
Damian Pierce, kind of a bit of a wild card. Bills haven't had to...
I don't think he's any good, though.
Bills haven't had to play him. He had a few good weeks last year.
Cam Akers is always their number two running back. He's their number two guy.
Yeah, but it's kind of like a 2A, 2B kind of sort of situation.
Yeah.
But I want to be not nervous about it, but I just can't get past CJ Stroud.
I can understand that. I'm finding myself not, I'm going to get bit by this, but like I'm not particularly worried. I think even if they lose this game, they should. This should be a much better performance than Baltimore.
Right.
I will say though, if they fall to 3-2 after losing games to Baltimore and Houston, I am nervous for the long term aspirations of the season. I think for the most part, the AFC East is going to be won. Miami, yeah. You saw without Tua, that is a bad roster.
Right.
It is not good by any means. The Jets, you should sweep them. They look bad. You lost 10-9 against Denver at home.
Right.
Good
job. Where at one point, Bo Nix had 7-for-7 completion and pass attempts and -6 passing yards.
It's a quarterback right there. That's a quarterback.
I love it.
But so real quick, though, on the C.J. Stroud point, because as I mentioned in the first segment, their offensive line is what concerns me.
Mm-hmm.
Not as a Bills fan, as a Houston Texans fan. Their offensive line is awful. Josh, they lead the league in false starts through 4 weeks.
Their center's name is Juice Scruggs.
That's awesome.
It's got to bring it back up a little bit.
That's so good.
It does make it a little bit better.
They lead the league in false starts.
Yeah.
The second team has 9 false start penalties through 4 weeks. That's the Chicago Bears, who it's kind of well known their offensive line is not good and sort of a rotating group. Again, Houston leads the way. How many do they have through 4 weeks?
You said Chicago has 9?
Yep.
15.
12.
Okay.
Still not great. No.
Not great.
This is also a game against Minnesota where, what was it, 3-4 plays in a row? It was either illegal or, a false start, illegal formation. Mm-hmm. It was constant on the O-line. Laremy Tunsil, just the man is made of pre-snap penalties. That's what he does.
Right. And if you want to look at it this way, too, in terms of matchup-wise, that's Greg Rousseau.
That's Rousseau and Miller. I mean, the big takeaway from Sunday night, too, as well, on the defense was – yeah, they had no plans on Von Miller ever being in that game to stop Derrick Henry, to deal with the run game. The key is a pass rushing specialist, which at his age I get, but then their 4-man rush was not getting home. They were really, really, really struggling. I think now they are going to pivot to we just got to beat them at our own game. We can't completely adjust what we're doing to placate them, because then you're playing into their hand. You played into Baltimore's hand. You didn't push the ball down the field. You kind of just collapsed on yourself after the 87-yard run, and you never really forced the ball to go through Lamar. You allowed just the game to be dictated by Derrick Henry, Justice Hill, and Lamar Jackson using his legs.
And
he made some great throws. I think part of that, though, was just there was so much fear. With Henry, they were wide open.
That's what I was going to say. Like, to be fair, there were a few times, too, where Lamar had to make a throw, and he made it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like, the Bills were shutting down the air. There were still moments where Isaiah Likely's wide open in the middle of three guys.
Yeah.
Like, he just finds that pocket in the zone, and it has a 30-yard gain.
Yep.
And that's one of the most frustrating plays in football to me, is when you have three players that are just standing in a circle around someone. And he catches the ball. It's so frustrating to watch, but I don't see that type of play coming from Houston, because Houston doesn't have the rushing ability in C.J. Stroud like Baltimore does with Lamar.
You kind of can't pin your ears back and just go.
Right, yeah. You don't have to worry about C.J. Stroud scrambling out of the pocket and getting a 20-yard gain.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Lamar can definitely do that, and he has before. And I don't know. I'm very cautious, because I don't want to sit here and say, oh, well, the Bills will lock up, Nico Collins, and then what's C.J. Stroud going to do?
Yeah.
Because that's kind of what the Vikings did, and I'm not saying it was a good game by any means. They lost 34-7, but when that happened, the leading receiver was Stephon Diggs with 10 catches for 94 yards. That's still it's not a great game, obviously, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, he wasn't efficient, and it was more due to, all right, we just got to throw the ball. I mean, we're down by so much.
The efficiency,
and he wasn't very efficient.
The efficiency's not there, but my point there, though, is I don't know. I'm nervous. I don't know. Yeah. I can't explain it. I'm just nervous. We saw all these great moments last year from C.J. Stroud and Nico Collins, and now you add in Stephon Diggs to that situation, and we know that Diggs is not a bad football player. It just didn't work out here. That's I think we all need to come to that conclusion, especially this week.
He has been good up to this. He is not wide receiver three. He's
wide receiver
number two.
Yeah. Because Tank Dell can't stay healthy, and he's also not what he looked to be.
He's not getting the target share that I think many of us assumed he would get.
Right, but Diggs so far this year has not had – he had one game under five receptions. Every other game he's had five or more.
Yep.
69 yards against Jacksonville, 94 against Minnesota, 37 against Chicago, and 33 against Indianapolis. Yes, I understand. Those look kind of like low numbers compared to what we've known Stephon Diggs to be. But he's a very good player still.
Yeah.
It just didn't work out here. That's the reason why he left. It wasn't, oh, he's old, he's washed. He still can be, and we all need to come to that realization right now before Sunday at 1 o'clock.
Still might be a little inefficient, though. 803-0550 is the number to call. John, we'll get to your call after a quick timeout. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Josh Mann here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. It is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Let's go back to the phones here. We've got John on the line. John, good morning, my friend. How are we doing today?
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Doing very well.
Good, thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I'm not going to panic about that Baltimore game. I think if you look over the years, even with the best teams in the league, everybody has a game like that now and then. And we knew going into there that Derrick Henry was going to be a beast. There's a lot of history with him and us. But I'm not going to be too concerned about that. But I think if we get manhandled by Houston, I think there is a pathway for a little bit of a concern here. I know the process is preached all the time, and we do have a bunch of new faces on offense, and Allen's getting used to that. But my question is this: is there any way you guys can see a Josh Allen reverting back to the, it looks like I'm going to have to do everything on my own again? I hate to see that coming, but do you see that coming about at all? And I'll hang up and take your answer. Thanks again, guys.
Thanks for the call, John. Yeah, I think there's absolutely a route that happens. I think mainly it's if guys are not getting open, that if all of a sudden it does become, I have a single guy I can look to. Right now that has been Khalil Shakir. We'll see about the ankle. I mean, that's, I think, a thing as well to look forward or keep an eye on, not look forward to, but keep an eye on for this week is how much he is able to move. Because, again, I think there was a clear difference in his ability to play on Sunday night. I think that's really the only way, though, you see that revert to it, because everyone has been talking about how much Allen has actually really enjoyed playing football. He's smiling a lot, the whole thing, when doing this. And he's been a big advocate of it as well. I think the only way it happens is if, oh boy, no one's getting open. Where's Shakir? Screw it, I'm running. And you're gonna try to make a play. And I think that's going to be the only way it happens. Outside of that, I mean, you still have a young guy in Keon Coleman who I think is getting better as the weeks go on. I think he has looked pretty darn good up to this point. He's kind of given you what you've wanted up to this point. We'll potentially see his usage go up too as the weeks go on, just because he's going to get more, you know, developed into this offense, and he'll understand a little bit more. Again, the game will slow down, all that stuff. The Houston game, though, I think that's my biggest thing is, like, I think they need to win this for me to feel good about it. The key here is that the division looked bad. The division looks like it is going to not be a cakewalk for the Bills. Well, arguably, it could be a very easy road for the Bills to get to like 11-6 and win the division pretty handily.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, though, I think a lot of Bills fans, I think rightfully, I would even put myself there, I don't really care about the division anymore. Like, I do. It means you're the one seed or the two seed. Don't get me wrong in that. But I do care more about January and February.
Right.
And so
it's getting to the point where it's like you got the division locked down. It's like, okay, cool, that's a given.
And the next step, you know?
Right, right.
Like, it'd be the same thing. I would be a fan, though, of the same thing of, like, let's say this is an argument from a few years ago where, like, we were 7-9, but we won the division, and it's like, I'm going to celebrate the division win. I'm not. I'm going to more look at it and go, cool, we're the worst of crap.
Right.
Awesome.
But I think it kind of can, like, play into the point about the Chiefs I brought up earlier of them being a paper tiger this season. If you look at the way the Bills can play the rest of this year and you're looking at just winning the division, the way the Chiefs look so far and the way the rest of the conference looks so far, right now it's potentially you and Baltimore going for the one seed.
I think Joe said this, like, we could be looking at week 7 and all of a sudden going, like, I know Baltimore beat us, but, like, it's just us two.
Right, because
Cincinnati, by the way, they beat Carolina. Mm-hmm. They have Baltimore now this week. Ooh. Their defense still looks like garbage.
Yeah. That's going to be a rough game.
And so Cincinnati could be a team that is 1-4 through 5 weeks. And I'm sorry, I won't care about you until you prove to me I care about you.
Well, and think about too. If the Bills beat the Texans, they're 3-2, and the Bills are 4-1.
Mm-hmm.
And who do the Chiefs play this week? Probably somebody that they're going to
take. New Orleans on Monday Night Football. I think it's Monday Night Football.
Interesting.
I love that game. That game should be good.
Fun.
That game should be really
good.
But
I'm not trying to, you know, put the cart before the horse, but if we're also confident about the division, this is the year that you can say, okay, well, the conference is also very much up for grabs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just because of the fact that Kansas City has a lot of injuries.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, man.
Unless they make some stupid move that somehow they get Davante Adams from the division rival.
I don't think it'll matter.
I don't think that'll happen, because it's a division rival, but I just...
Because Amari Cooper could be up in there, and while it's AFC, I get it, that those trades happen.
What if the Bills go for Amari Cooper?
I should be kind of for that. Amari Cooper, when he got traded to Dallas, like, changed their season, so, like, wouldn't be against...
Yeah. It's a money thing, though.
It's a money thing, but also it depends on... I don't want them to give up a first or second round pick to do a move in season. I am very much build your team through first and second round picks. You know, develop your team.
You have 2 second round picks.
You do, and one of them has gone from that could be really good to, oh boy.
Right, yeah. Now it's basically a third round pick.
So, I mean, we'll see on that. Let's jump into the Chiefs here after a quick timeout. 803-0550, the number to call, though, if you want to give your thoughts on the first month of the NFL season, the Bills in particular, or NFL as a whole. I mean, me and Josh are just saying that the AFC still could be very much up for grabs. Zach Jones and Josh Mint here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. You're listening to WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Hour number 2 rolls along here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Zach Jones and Josh Smith. We're talking about college basketball in the break. Don't worry, we're not going to talk about it too long.
Zach screamed. Like,
I'm so excited.
I'm pretty sure it would have been audible throughout our entire offices here.
Good. They also need to be excited, as I am. So Gonzaga is officially going to the Pac-12, which is the surprise of nobody. That's been, like, a report for, I think, quite a few weeks up to this point, as the Pac-12 is kind of trying to, like, reestablish themselves as, like, make a Power 5 conference. Gonzaga, though, going in just as a basketball school. They're leaving the West Coast Conference. And now it also sounds like Grand Canyon may never actually play a game in the West Coast Conference, as that was also on the Pac-12's wish list as a basketball-only school, or potentially non-football school. I think bringing their other programs as well. That is something I desperately wanted. I know Grand Canyon, many people will say, is a quote-unquote fake school. I'm not saying it. I've seen other people say it. And... I like their athletic program. I think they've put a lot into it. They're a lot of fun. They've got a cool color dynamic with the purple, black, and white. I think it looks great. And I was like, I was excited for, like, this, like, budding rivalry. Like, they just played St. Mary's in the NCAA tournament. They beat them. So I'm like, oh man, like now the West Coast will have, like, a legitimate, like, 3 teams that should be in the NCAA tournament every year. And you'll actually have battles with Gonzaga, because St. Mary's just... they do not recruit on the same level that Gonzaga does. Grand Canyon recruits better than St. Mary's. Not on Gonzaga's level, but they recruit better than St. Mary's, and they just won their first game in the NCAA tournament. Like, they've kind of just arrived. And then Gonzaga left, and I was like, no! All right, well, Grand Canyon wins the conference. And nay. They might leave. It's still up in the air. They're on, I guess, the wish list. I'm seeing reports on that, but we'll see. I'm just excited. I like college basketball a lot. College football is already, you know, off and running, which has been great. We had an unbelievable game on Saturday this week between Georgia and Alabama that, man, like, it was so good. It was so good. I will tell you, though, if you're a Giants fan, what do you want more as a Giants fan, Josh? Just real quick on here, because I do want to jump on the Chiefs here. But if you're a Giants fan, right now, you're sitting in Newark, New Jersey. You've just watched your 5th rerun of The Sopranos this year.
Can it be anywhere but New Jersey? Does it have to be New Jersey?
Yeah, it has to be.
Fine, I guess. I'm moving. First thing, I'm moving.
Fair. What's the quarterback situation? Daniel Jones is gone. I think we all know that.
Yeah, yeah. He has to be.
What would you rather do? Pay, as I put it, a GDP of a small European country for Sam Darnold, or draft Jalen Milroe?
Ooh.
Because I left that game. I will tell you right now, going into this college season, I thought Milroe was a lot of fun, but I didn't know if he was an NFL quarterback. He made a number of quote-unquote Saturday or Sunday throws that like have now gotten me excited about him. Because his ability to run
actually
it's so dangerous.
I don't know why I'm thinking about this. This is an easy decision. You draft Jalen Milroe.
You go the young guy. You go Milroe.
Because I'm thinking about it. And yes, Sam Darnold is still quote-unquote young. He's Josh Allen's age.
I'm pretty sure Burrow's older.
No. What?
I'm like 99.9% sure that Joe Burrow's older than Sam Darnold. Darnold was younger coming out of the draft. He was 21. And like not like I'm going to turn 22.
They're the same age.
They're the same age.
They're both 27. Wait.
Who has the earliest birthday?
Ooh. Joe Burrow, December 10th, 1996. Sam Darnold, June 5th, 1997.
Well, I forget how old Joe Burrow was when he came out of the draft. I mean, he was an older guy.
He doesn't look it, though. That's the other thing.
No. I mean, he's still young. He's 27, right?
No. But, like, you look... Right. But you look at him, and he looks like he's, like, 25.
Yeah. Well, I mean, basically the same.
And 2 years in the NFL is a lot different than two years in real life.
We're not going to ultimately change here until we're, like, 35.
No, I know.
I'm going to look relatively the same.
Well, and when you're looking at an NFL player, or any athlete for that matter, 25 to 27 is a big difference. Especially in the NFL.
Yeah,
fair. Like, obviously, position varies. Quarterback, it's not that big of a deal. But, like, if it's a running back and he's 25 or he's 27, it's like, whoa, that's an old man over there.
But if I'm a Giants fan,
you got to draft Jalen Miller. I mean, look, Sam Darnold is looking to be really good right now, but that's with Kevin O'Connell. That's with Justin Jefferson. Well, that's with everything in Minnesota.
But if you're the Giants, you can argue we have Brian Daboll. He got easily the most out of Daniel Jones that anyone could.
Mm-hmm.
Took him to the playoffs, won a playoff game. You have maybe the ascending star in the sport in Malik Nabers. I don't know.
Putting Milroe with Nabers, though.
That'll feed families.
Yeah.
that'll be fun. But now, and here's the thing. So I said it as a Giants fan, but if you're Joe Shane and Brian Daboll and you get another shot at this, you're not drafting a quarterback.
No, you're taking Sam Darnold.
You're taking what looks to be the surefire thing.
Depending on how the rest of the season goes.
Sure.
Because, again, there is time for Sam Darnold to Darnold himself and fall apart.
I'm going to be so upset about that.
I don't think it'll happen, but...
I'll be crushed. They're a lot... They're interesting, though.
It does go back to...
The Giants, in terms of, like... I think they've got maybe the foundations to be a good team. They're just truly a quarterback away from being at least relatively competitive, but a quarterback changes everything in a room. It changes everything on a team, everything. So if they were to get a guy like Darnold who really had ascended into, oh man, like this is what everyone thought after the Rose Bowl game against Penn State that he could be.
Right.
This is what got him drafted third overall by the Jets.
Well, I was just about to bring up the draft too, because think about it.
Mm-hmm.
The Bills obviously draft Josh Allen at 7, and the Jets take Darnold at 3.
Mm-hmm.
Was Brian Daboll part of the, I really want Sam Darnold, but I know he's not going to fall to his team?
For the Bills?
For the Bills. Because that's his first draft as an offensive coordinator.
I mean, I've always had a theory that I think Allen was not actually their number one quarterback on the board. Mm-hmm. I do think it was Darnold. That might also just be me being a big Darnold fan that I was.
Yeah.
But also, look, what Allen has become, I think, writes away a lot of what was talked about him pre-draft. But, was genuine fears. Honestly, if the Bills were unanimous in Allen being their number one quarterback on the board, I would have been concerned.
Oh, no, I think so, too.
Legitimate concerns, where with Darnold, the concern, honestly, was turnovers. Outside of that, it was, all right, like, that's... He's 6'3", 6'4", has got a bazooka of an arm, throws a beautiful football, has led USC to some sort of relevancy, including winning the Rose Bowl. Like you felt great about him.
Yeah.
To the point where I was stunned he wasn't the first overall pick, and Baker was. And I think a lot of people were. When Baker was the first overall pick, that was quite stunning.
I think with Baker, though, it's more than numbers.
Oh,
like just the sheer touchdowns he put up.
Him in Oklahoma was awesome.
138 touchdowns.
But I have no insider information. I mean, I was just out of high school at that time.
2018.
2 years out of high school at the time. Yeah. So I no sources. Mm-hmm. I always kind of thought Darnold fit what the Bills wanted.
Right. Right.
Allen also kind of fit it.
But he was more of a project.
But he was much more of a project and much more of like a, this could get us fired, where I think at the time Darnold was more perceived as, we'll be fine.
But it also goes back to, you know, Darnold was going to go in the top three.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was never going to be a situation where the Bills were somehow going to have Darnold fall to him.
Yeah.
Even if he fell out of the top three, Cleveland is there again at four. But never mind.
Who'd they take?
They took Baker and Denzel Ward.
Oh, that's right, Denzel.
But then you have Denver at five. Obviously, they were, I mean, John Elway said earlier this summer, he almost took Josh Allen there.
It was if Bradley Chubb wasn't there.
Right. And then Indy. Why did Indy take a guard?
Quentin Nelson. Oh, their offensive line was horrendous.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And remember, that's, they still had Andrew Luck at the time.
Luck hadn't retired.
It was like, we need to fix this. And he was considered at the time, and even started his career like it, as a generational prospect.
I have a Sports Illustrated, like, college edition of Andrew Luck when he was in college. Like, and it was like about him like bursting onto the scene. And, you know, that's a great, we talked about it last week. That's a great what if in sports.
Oh, I was talking about Quinn Nelson. But yeah, Andrew Luck was considered a generational prospect. I mean, I know. Nelson, when they took him, he was considered as like the best guard prospect.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Luck there. Okay, well, still, regardless, it works both ways. But,
well, you know, no, okay. He might still have it. Six Pro Bowls from 2018 to 2023 and three first team All Pros, 2018 to 2020, a second team All Pro, 2021. I mean, no, that pick has worked out wonderfully for them.
But again, back to the whole overarching point here. I just wonder what Dable wanted in that draft. And if he wanted Sam Darnold, he has his chance to get him now as a head coach with Malik Nabers. It's almost like the reverse of, now you have the base that you want, kind of, and you don't have to develop the quarterback. But I still think that Jalen Milroe is the answer. You have to look at the talent he has there and the longevity you could get with him and Nabers together and then build around that.
I think as well, just his ability to run, you're seeing it with Jaden Daniels. You can slow play the passing game and sort of build it up as the weeks go on to where now, I mean, what we're seeing with Daniels is he might break the NFL record for completion percentage in a season. And they basically have like Terry McLaurin and that's it. And like Zach Ertz. They really don't have much. Their running game has been stupendous.
Brian Robinson.
With Brian Robinson, Jaden Daniels.
Austin Eckler?
And McMillan, something like that.
I thought, isn't Austin Eckler also there?
Yeah, but he's hurt.
Oh, that's right.
But they have been great. And then with Milroe, it's the same thing. And you saw what Dable could do with Allen, who could run. Then you bring in a guy who's become a much, much better thrower of the football. I think Kalen DeBoer has gotten so much out of him. He has been awesome to watch at Alabama up to this point. To the point where we're all sitting here going, I thought they were dead.
Nope. Jeremy McNichols.
McNichols. Yeah, they're getting everyone involved. He's getting touchdown spots.
He's getting touchdowns, yeah.
But they're getting everyone involved, and they're a lot of fun to watch.
Austin Eckler has played three games.
So was he just hurt recently? I feel like he didn't play last week.
He only started one game.
Okay.
And he's gotten 83 touchdowns and or 83 yards and one touchdown.
Yeah. It's mainly been Brian Robinson Jr. with like, you know, sprinkles in. It's not as aggressive as Detroit, where it's like, no, we have Jahmyr Gibbs. We also have David Montgomery.
I felt like a fool for drafting Brian Robinson as early as I did, but here we are.
Working out for you.
Fantasy football. Let's go.
So we mentioned it there before our last time out. We kind of got into the weeds there a little bit. But the Kansas City Chiefs, I do want to jump in on them because they, to me, are just a team that I think has been surviving, not thriving, even when they're winning Super Bowls, which is very frustrating. As somebody and as a team that is trying to obviously win their first one, to watch 2 years in a row Kansas City kind of limp to the playoffs, not look that great, but always, and I think rightfully so up to this point, have the benefit of the doubt. But now this year, and this has been my big thing going into this week now after the weekend, has been, there is a reason why no team in NFL history, even before the really ascendancy of free agency in the 90s, starting with Reggie White going to Green Bay, really being the first big move, that there has never been a three-peat of a Super Bowl champion. Number one, it's hard anyways to get there, even when you're elite.
It's why still, even though they lost all four, the Bills making it to four in a row is still absurdly impressive.
The Patriots were undefeated and lost in the
Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And really, they weren't even that good in the playoffs. Right. Brady's numbers dipped tremendously from, you know, the 50 touchdowns. They're going scorched earth on the NFL. The Chiefs have sort of now run into a problem that, well, no one ever wants to kind of put out there and say, well, you know, if this happens, they'll lose. But ultimately, it does happen a lot. Injuries. And they've sort of left themselves open to this because they've missed a lot at the wide receiver position. They have. You know, Sky Moore has been a guy that, I mean, went from unplayable to now he has to play. He has not been good at all. He's not getting snaps. He's not getting targets.
I mean, they're relying on
The field.
They're about to be relying on Mecole Hardman.
Again. And he was perfect for them when he was their wide receiver four. That could kind of be the fast gadget guy.
And Juju Smith-Schuster.
Who, like, his knee might be shot.
Right. Their offense looks so good just because of Patrick Mahomes, but underneath that, and that's why I put it up on Twitter. If you want to check it out, I just put up a question. Simply, in the AFC, are the Chiefs a paper tiger, given all their injuries? And I look at everything they have, and it's basically just like Mahomes.
And the defense.
The defense.
It's the defense.
The defense is very good. I will say that. Like, they've
kept them alive.
Yeah. There's a reason why Chris Jones is as important as he is to this team. It's because he's a mainstay in that defense. And you're even getting a lot more out of their secondary and linebackers than you have in years past, I think. I mean,
well, because they've nailed the draft in terms of
right.
You know, Nick Bolton getting there, McDuffie, stuff like that. Like, they've nailed those defensive picks. The problem is, though, you saw it last year. They needed everything out of everyone to get to the Super Bowl, and then it took overtime to win it. It took everything. Mahomes, I think it was right at the beginning of training camp or a little bit into it, said, we know we didn't play good football. We knew most of the year.
Yeah, they said it wasn't fun.
Yeah, it was not fun. Well, yeah, and it's, you know, I know there was a thing about Brady and Mayfield.
Oh,
and
that,
you
also.
Know, right. I had fun because we were winning Super Bowls. And it's like, I think most of your teammates have kind of acknowledged, though, like, we went to New England to win Super Bowls. We didn't go to have fun. Like, it was basically boot camp. Like, it was hell.
Right. Well, but, and you know, we did this earlier with the Texans where we look at their wins this year or their records this year in terms of how the games went and everything like that and how close everything was. The Chiefs is the same thing. They barely beat Baltimore in week one because Isaiah Likely's foot is a half size too big.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if he had size 10 sneakers, they win the game.
They beat the Bengals by 1 point, 26-25.
And if Jamar Chase doesn't freak out because of a non-call, that's not a 15-yard penalty the other way. They maybe keep driving.
The Falcons game, I mean, 22-17, it's not – it's still close. But it felt more in control, right? Like, it didn't really feel like it did.
It was more just Falcons offense couldn't really get anything going.
Yeah,
and I mean,
I think that's probably why they felt like
Butker had a lot of field goals in this game as well. I think three straight scoring drives of field goals.
Yeah.
So that's where it felt more in control. But again, that's their biggest issue, is their offense isn't scoring.
And then last week you go to the Chargers and you beat them 17-10. The leading rusher in that game was Kareem Hunt.
Welcome back.
69 yards.
Welcome back, Kareem Hunt.
And then the leading receiver, Travis Kelce, with 89 yards.
And I don't know how sustainable that is.
No, it's not. I mean,
he looks shot.
Mahomes threw for 245 yards in that game, but to who?
It was Kelce and Worthy.
89 yards to Kelce, and then 73 to Worthy, and then everything else is just kind of split up amongst the rest of the team. I mean, Sky Moore gets two targets, no catches, no yards.
That's been the thing up to this point is you've been looking at the Chiefs all year going, man, they don't look that good, and they don't. Now they've built themselves a cushion. They're 4-0.
Right.
They're going to be there in the playoffs. They're likely, if not, I mean, whatever, they should be minus money at this point to win the AFC West because that division is a joke. But New Orleans is a tough team. We'll see how that goes. Then they get the bye, and then they get at San Francisco.
They get the early bye, too. Wow.
Yeah, it's very early bye. But I don't actually think that's going to be good for them. I think
they're a
team that, like, has desperately needed.
Like, I'm happy. The Bills' bye is what, 13?
It's late, yeah.
Week 12, maybe?
Looking at it now. Theirs is week
13.
13.
Oh, wait, no, 12. Excuse me. 13 is the next game against San Francisco.
Oh, right.
But so,
that game.
Is their schedule necessarily hard? No. But
I think part of it, though, is a lot like with the Bills' schedule. You can look at their division just being bad.
Well, a very similar thing, too, as well. They're not really caring about the division anymore. They know they're probably going to win it every year.
They haven't for however many years now. The Bills, I feel like we're just getting to the point of, okay, the division doesn't matter because Miami threatened you last year, and not that it doesn't matter.
I want to word it better than making it sound like the parties aren't as fun anymore.
Right. The division it's expected.
It's a means to an end.
And it shouldn't be that way, but it's just the fact that, yes, last year Miami threatened you.
Mm-hmm.
They were there for a second. Well, they were actually there for most of the season. They threw it away in a second.
Yep.
But with the Chiefs, it's much of the same thing. You can look at their division. It's very comparable to the AFC East. You have the Broncos. You could kind of compare them to the Patriots in terms of you're rebuilding. You're starting anew,
mm-hmm.
right? You can look at the Chargers, and I don't really know if you can call them the Dolphins because I think Justin Herbert's better than Tua. But you can.
Yeah, but they're the team that's supposed to constantly threaten, and they literally never do.
Fall apart. The Raiders and the Jets don't have many similarities except for the fact that they're both bad. But yeah. I mean,
and they're kind of always bad.
Yeah, right. And you kind of expect them to be. So it's very comparable in the two divisions. So like you said, the Chiefs aren't looking at the division anymore. They're looking at the conference and making it to the Super Bowl and getting that one seed, getting that first round bye. That's what's their goal. To start the year,
and I don't know how they're. Look, again, there's a reason why no one has ever three-peated.
Exactly,
and yeah. I think that's for me is it opens up a window to maybe for the Bills in a transition year to strike while the iron's hot.
And
you mentioned there's a good chance they meet Baltimore. Maybe in the playoffs, sure, but Baltimore mm-hmm. also can fall short. It's not like Baltimore themselves has been perfect in the playoffs. Oftentimes, they're the biggest disappointment in the playoffs.
Right.
Especially the Bills.
Last year.
Yeah, not the Bills. The Baltimore Ravens have oftentimes been the biggest disappointment. They're the team that miraculously throws everything in the air and goes, we're going to change it up, baby. And it's a disaster. And so it's early. It's October 1st. We're through the first month of the season.
Right.
But through the first month of the season, I think the storylines have been Minnesota is, oh my gosh, good. Kansas City, the injuries keep piling up. They'll get Isaiah Pacheco back, I think, in a few weeks. Stuff like that. We'll see how the second opinion goes for Rashee Rice. I think, though, that's going to be pretty much the whole year, if not basically the whole year. Hollywood Brown's already out. You're going to have to get a ton from Xavier Worthy, which we'll see how that goes. Baltimore's good. They do still give up a lot in the second half. The Bills are a bad turnover and a bad play call away from really making that a game. Bengals are staring down the pipe of 1-4. They are not in a good situation at all with playing Baltimore this week. Houston looks very vulnerable, namely on the offensive line. Even with the wide receiver weapons they have, with Nico Collins looking like a freak of nature, Stephon Diggs is their wide receiver too and looks good in that role. Most false start penalties. I have to look at the sack numbers, but I think they're up there as well on that, or at least the pressure rates. You know, Jacksonville never got off the ground. They're 0-4. Doug Peterson probably should be the first coach fired. Cleveland. When will you bench Deshaun Watson?
How do you feel about the Chargers?
Chargers. They're still the Chargers. Also, their injuries.
Right.
Two That's tackles. True.
They have the bye week, though.
They have the bye week, but they're kind of a same thing like with Baltimore in the playoffs or even the Bills in the playoffs. Like, until you do it, I'm not going to trust you.
Yeah.
They just cannot get off the ground. You needed to win that game. It's at home. They immediately lose Rashee Rice. They're not moving the ball. You scored early. It felt good.
They have a relatively easy schedule the rest of the way. I mean, you have Denver, mm-hmm. Arizona, New Orleans, which, depending on how the next few weeks go, we'll see if New Orleans was also just kind of a flash in the pan.
Yeah.
And then you have Cleveland, Tennessee, Cincinnati, Baltimore, Atlanta, Kansas City again, Tampa Bay, Denver, New England, Las Vegas. Like, they have the potential to be there, and you'll have to see, you know, if Harbaugh can actually put it all together. But
which I think he will, just maybe not this year.
Right. Yeah. It might just take a couple of years. But I don't know. I look at around the AFC, and it's all the usual suspects of, aside from the Bengals, really, of the Bills, the Ravens, the Chiefs, and mm-hmm. the Texans.
Yep.
And out of those four, I think it's the Bills and the Ravens that are the best in there.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, it's, like you said, October, but it's still feels like it's just kind of right there for the taking.
Well, and I think it's also one of those things of like, you know, when are we allowed then to like really start talking about these things? Week 6, 7, 8? I mean, you're through 1 month. Storylines are beginning to develop. You've kind of got an idea of who's going to be around, you know, towards the end of the year. You're starting to figure that out. I think it's okay to start talking about these, but also acknowledging that there's a lot of season left. Likewise, though, for the Bills, I think good news, they're also getting healthier, which is not something that happens really ever in NFL seasons. You typically get more injured, or your depth gets tested far more. 803-0550 is the number to call. I want to jump into baseball. Of course, the news last night that Pete Rose has died. We also have the playoffs starting today. I want to jump in a little bit on that coming up after a quick timeout. Zach Jones and Josh Mead here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
Couple of times, Schau kicks and he fires. Rose swings.
There it is! There it is! Get out! Get out! All right! Hit number 4192.
If you have missed it, announced late last night, MLB's all-time hit leader Pete Rose died at the age of 83. That was ultimately the hit that got him the record. He does finish, though, his 24-season career with 4,256 hits. Played predominantly with the Cincinnati Reds. I think ultimately did finish, though, his career with the Philadelphia Phillies in 80. He's maybe the most polarizing figure in modern sports.
No, he finished his career with Cincinnati.
He did finish it with Cincinnati?
He played in Philly for,
I think it was just
5 years.
Oh, okay.
He also played in Montreal for 1 year.
Did he?
And then he came back.
And then he went back to the Reds.
So he went from Cincinnati to Philly in 1979.
Okay.
And then back to, or then to Montreal in 1984, and then back to Cincinnati in that 84 season, and retired in 86.
And then ultimately, for a few years, manages the Reds.
Yep.
Which is where the kind of the up and down controversial legacy for Rose comes in. I want to start out right here before we dive into this. I do think Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame. I think he will get in the Hall of Fame now that he has passed away, which I think is very gross. There is a documentary on HBO I want to watch badly. I've watched the first episode and I just kind of put it away, but it's on Rose and his legacy, and you're getting a lot of people, sportscasters, what have you, talking about the man himself and his gambling and ultimately what got him banned from baseball. It is something, though, I really do want to catch up on, because I find him to be an interesting character in sports, if that's not a great way to put it. But this is very baseball. That one of their greatest players of all time is also one of their most controversial. We talk about the home run between Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, ultimately as well. Also, Ken Griffey Jr., by the way, starts that year off as kind of considered maybe one of the favorites along with McGwire. But both McGwire and Sosa, steroids. And so a summer that arguably saved baseball is sort of marred in this like controversy. That is baseball. It is a controversial sport. Even when it's not doing anything rule breaking, it's a slow game. It's boring at times. Yeah. They make rule changes to speed the game up.
Yeah.
You know, Barry Bonds, I think many people argue, is a Hall of Famer before the steroids even come in. Same with A-Rod. You know, you have the Black Sox way back in the 19 teens. Mm-hmm. It's a sport that is marred by controversy that absolutely hates itself for it. And that is my frustrating thing. When I said there that I think Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame, and I think it's going to be gross when he's ultimately voted in, I think basically next year, whenever the voting comes up, he'll be voted in, is because I think baseball is very petty, or mainly the Baseball Hall of Fame is very petty,
right?
And they don't want him in. But ultimately, though, as well, in the same breath, I think Rose ultimately has handled himself with the gambling stuff poorly. The constant back and forth of, oh, I did it. Well, no, I actually never did it. Well, I only bet on my teams. Well, actually, no, I didn't bet on the Reds when certain pitchers were playing. You know,
he had bad PR.
Yeah.
And I think the hardest part is you look at his career accolades. He was MVP 1 year, Rookie of the Year, 17-time All-Star, mm-hmm. 2-time Gold Glove, 3 World Series winner, Silver Slugger, World Series MVP once, 3 times in the batting title. He also played the most games in MLB history.
My goodness.
3,562.
Oof. I think as well, too, is
by 200 games, he has the most games played in MLB history.
Wow.
Yeah. He also has the most plate appearances and the most at bats and the most hits.
Yep. So I mean, he is the batting leader. I mean, that's
he has 15,890 plate appearances.
Wow.
And out of those, he had 4,256 hits.
I think as well, what was also, and this is in that first episode of the documentary that's on HBO that I'm going to watch it, I think, tonight. The big thing, too, was, I mean, his nickname as well, Charlie Hustle. He was not this athletic freak. He was not a dude that was, he wasn't even really a home run hitter. He was not.
Like I said, he had 4,256 hits. How many home runs did he have? Guess.
I'd be very surprised if it's over 300.
It's half of that. It's 160.
Yeah, I would be stunned.
160 home runs, but 4,256 hits.
Yeah, he was kind of like, he was, I don't think this is one of his nicknames, but like he was Mr. Fundamental. He was a guy that you probably had your little league coaches going, like, watch Pete Rose play. Because he plays hard, he does everything kind
to
of
quote
like fundamentally
ball,
correct.
He gets on base.
He gets on base. He got hits. And it's just.
He's also a switch hitter.
Yeah, but it is a shame with Rose's. And I think what's a shame, too, is I think a lot of fans kind of knew this conversation was coming of, like, when Pete Rose passes away, that's when the Baseball Hall of Fame will let him in.
It's always been in the back of people's minds, too.
And I hate it because you knew it was coming, and that was the thing of, like, everyone knows the Hall of Fame is petty, and they're going to fight tooth and nail to not get him in. And then the moment, in a way, he can't enjoy it. In a moment where he can't, you know, have a speech at Cooperstown and all that stuff, they'll let him in. And it feels really wrong.
I think it's hard because you don't want to put someone that's involved with a major scandal in your league's Hall of Fame. But at the same time, look at Barry Bonds.
Well, but I think Barry Bonds is not going to get in.
I know. But that's the problem that I'm trying to bring up. Like, Barry Bonds is one of the biggest faces in baseball.
Oh, yeah.
And he's never going to get in the
Baseball
Hall of
Fame. Never going to get in. And then this thing is it's also something I very much enjoy about baseball. It is a sport that just is so controversial in and of itself. Yeah. It is.
And it causes its own problems.
It absolutely does.
It can't get out of its own way sometimes. But and I'm not, and this is no discredit to Pete Rose, because obviously he has many different all-time career accolades in terms of the MLB.
Mm-hmm.
If he didn't get involved with this whole betting thing, if none of this ever came out, or if he just never did it, how much of a figure is he in the game? Obviously, like I said, he has the most hits, he has the most games played, he has all that, but is he as much of a figure or a, you know, folk legend as he is?
I think if there's not
the betting scandal.
I think he would be, because there is this uncomfortableness of talking about his legacy. Like, if you're on MLB Network or really anything with baseball, there's always this uncomfortableness of, like, but the gambling and stuff like that.
I'm saying take out the gambling.
No, what I'm saying is I think he's talked about way more.
Oh, okay.
Because, like, he is the perfect, like, he was a hustle guy. He played the game the right way.
Right.
He is the batting leader. Hits, of course, is the big one, but as you brought up, it's the plate appearances, the most games played. Like, he is that guy. I think he is revered if it wasn't for the gambling. As well, I think up to this point was not even having a bad managerial career with the Reds. So, like, you would have had up to a point of, like, just like, of course we're going to talk about him a lot. Where now, we're sitting here talking about the man passed away yesterday, and it's difficult to talk about his legacy because of the being banned from baseball.
As a manager, he managed for 6 seasons and had an overall record of 412 and 373.
Did he make the playoffs at all in that run? I don't even know if it shows it. I mean, he's above 500. I'll take it.
Yeah, he was above 500, but I'm not seeing
any playoff
appearances. I'm gonna have to dig a little
but
deep on this.
It's something I really like about baseball that baseball hates about itself, and I can understand why. If I was the commissioner, I probably wouldn't like it either. But as a fan, I really do like how just kind of grimy the game can be a little bit. You know, you had the whole steroid era. I've already brought up the Black Sox scandal.
3 years of that, he was a player manager.
Oh, boy.
The first 3 years, he was a player manager. When he goes back to the Reds in 84.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Yeah, I'm going to have to watch that Pete Rose documentary. Let's go to the phones here, though. We've got Rick on the line. Rick, how are we doing today?
Good. How are you guys doing today?
Doing very well.
I just had to chime in about Pete Rose. I'm a diehard baseball fan only because I'm a Mets fan, so you're definitely diehard.
Congratulations on yesterday.
Hey, go Mets. Big game today.
I appreciate it. Now, I've been to the Baseball Hall of Fame, and when you go in there, you see Pete Rose's glove. You see Pete Rose's bat. You see Pete Rose's uniform. You see Pete Rose's cleats. Just put the guy in there, man. I understand what happened, but Michael Jordan's still in the Basketball Hall of Fame, and that dude gambled with millions of dollars.
Yeah, like relatively well-known. Rick, yeah, thanks for the call. That was the thing, too. Like, that's relatively – I mean, in the documentary of The Last Dance, it was like he would gamble on everything. The problem was, and while I don't totally agree with it, it was he was gambling on baseball. Now, what is funny on that, Rick brings out, basically everything of Pete Rose is in the Hall of Fame except the man himself.
Right.
Which is wild. By the way, have you ever been to Cooperstown, Josh?
I have not. That's one of the bucket list places.
I was hoping you said no, because if you said yes, it would be like, oh, okay, all right, cool. It's like a religious experience going to Cooperstown. I'm not even the biggest baseball purist. Like, it's probably like four or five on like my list of sports I love watching. I love watching playoff baseball. Like today, I'm super excited. Games start like at 2:30, and they go basically the whole day. Can't wait. I'm excited for that. But it is like an experience, especially like if you ever watch like the Ken Burns documentaries, which like end at like the 90s. Like they don't even have the modern game. It's oh man, it's just it is a lot. It is really, really cool. But yeah, Rick's absolutely right to bring up that like basically everything of Pete Rose is in the Hall of Fame but the man himself. And that's why, to your point as well, when like, you know, if this almost folk hero, folk legend thing isn't there as he talked about as much, I think he's talked about so much more because he finishes playing like the mid 80s around there and all of his titles still stand, all of them. Or all of the important ones, you know, and we've seen guys like Ken Griffey come into the game, Mike Trout, you know, Shohei Ohtani now. And I get these guys aren't necessarily hitting for average, but I think that's also a big thing, too, you know, coming into today's game where guys don't hit for average anymore. That was a big story of this year in baseball. I think it's changed a little bit, but that was a big thing to start the year of, you know, they had like four guys hitting above 300.
In his time as manager, they did not make it to the postseason.
But I think even now, more than ever, he'd be talked about a lot because his player just isn't around anymore.
Right.
And that his records really might stand the test of time.
Yeah, and it also goes back to the whole, like, you know, the caller that brought up Michael Jordan. And it's, like, I've never had an issue with players betting on other sports. I've never really, like, when all that stuff came out a couple of years ago with Jameson Williams and a lot of the Lions players, like betting in the Lions facility.
It was in the facility or on the plane.
It mattered to me what they were betting on. Mm-hmm. If they weren't betting on football, I don't care. You can bet on cricket for all I care about. But if you're betting about your sport, that's a little shady.
Yeah.
That's where I kind of have an issue with it because it's directly involving you, especially if it's the games and the teams that you're playing for.
And especially because this is baseball. Mm-hmm. Have the Black Sox scandal.
You have
now. Now there is always the fear of were you ever point shaving?
Yeah, in baseball more than any other sport, mm-hmm. you have a really easy ability to look bad and do purposely bad, and everyone's he's just got a bad day. Like think about like if you see in football like a player like purposely going down,
faking the injuries,
right? Or just like. He could have had a touchdown there, but he just fell short.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the second half. Like, it's not like a time management thing. Like, it's clearly, you know, something else. Like, that's where you can tell, like, what's happening. But in baseball, it's super difficult to tell because, I mean,
it's a hard game in and of itself.
Yeah, I could go up there and go 0 for 4 and, he'll be fine tomorrow.
Yep.
Like, it doesn't matter. Yeah, but so I could have gone 0 for 4 and won $1,000, you know,
and then and you have that, and then him going back and forth, lying about
right,
it initially,
yeah, never really going. It was, right,
you know, I'm giving baseball a lot of grief here, but if I was in their spot, I probably would have come away with the same thing. 803-0550, the number to call. Got to take a quick time out here. When we come back, we'll wrap up today's show. Get you over to Sabres Live. You're listening to the Extra Point Show, and this is WGR. Welcome back, everyone, to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. We'll get more of a look at the Houston Texans tomorrow, as we'll have John Harris on the show at 11 a.m. Very excited for that. But yesterday in the hockey world, there was some stuff going on with the Boston Bruins. Josh,
you hate to see their downfall.
Yeah, you've been getting fired up.
Here it comes. We said it was coming last year. No, it's this year. Oh, the boy. Boston Bruins do not have an NHL-caliber goaltender right now. Jonas Korpisalo, yes. Well, he has had good years in the NHL. He's not what he used to be. He is their goaltender. You're probably asking yourself, hey, what happened to Jeremy Swayman? Well, he's not signing a contract. And according to president of hockey ops, Cam Neely of the Boston Bruins, they offered him a $64 million deal. Jeremy Swayman's agent says, we've never heard of this $64 million deal.
Yeah, it's not good when the agent gets involved and is like, I'm just going to clear the air here.
Right.
I don't know what that number is.
Jonas Korpisalo, last season, played 55 games for the Ottawa Senators. You want to know which numbers were, Zach? Because I know you're a big save percentage guy.
Big save percentage guy.
0.89.
That's really bad.
And 3.2 goals against. Granted, it's the Ottawa Senators, and you're thinking, well, Josh, the Bruins, they're always good. They figure it out somehow. Well, they have David Pastrnak, and they have the shell of Brad Marchand.
Sure.
That's kind of it.
Playoffs. They will be there.
If they make it to the playoffs this year, if they're even in the top three of the division, I'm going to be so upset. There's no way they should be that good this year. Also, former Buffalo Sabre Nikita Zadorov signed with the Bruins.
Oh, very nice.
On July 1st. Completely missed that.
Yeah, they're almost definitely going to be good, and it's very frustrating.
I don't understand why, though. Like, looking at these people, this roster breakdown, I don't understand how they would be good.
They figured out.
I really
for
don't.
Whatever reason, they
all of their right wingers, I've never heard of them except for Pastrnak.
It's going to be.
I don't even know who the third and fourth line right wingers are.
It is going to sting when they make the playoffs.
It is.
Speaking of hockey season, though, that gets underway on Friday. The Sabres wrapped up their preseason schedule last night with an overtime win, and now on Friday over in Prague. They will take on the Devils to get the season underway. I believe puck drop is at 1 o'clock pregame right here on WGR. We'll actually start at noon. But speaking of hockey, coming up after a quick timeout, Sabres Live, you're listening to WGR.